Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
He is a Hall of Famer. He was a terrific broadcaster. And if you're around him for 5 minutes, I can personally tell you he's a Hall of Fame person. Dick Vermeil. Coach, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's always great to be affiliated with State College, Pennsylvania.
If I recall correctly, I believe your daughter went to Penn State. And if I recall correctly, I think you used to have a place up near Lamar, right?
Yeah, I still do. My daughter did go there and graduated there, and so did one grandson go there and graduate there.
One of 11, by the way, one of 11 grandchildren.
Yeah.
They're the greatest thing going. I have 7, so I know.
You know what I'm talking about. You're talking about.
Sure, yeah. Do. Coming up on Friday night at Summit Hall at the Match Factory in Bellefonte, wine tasting, and this is Vermeil Wines. When did you become deeply interested in wine along the way in your lifetime?
Well, you know, when you grow up in the Napa Valley, Steve, like I did as a youngster, you know, in Calistoga, a little town of 1,800 people at that time, if you couldn't talk about grapes, prunes, or walnuts, or get involved in picking them for 25 cents a bucket or box, you had nothing to talk about. You know? So growing up at that environment, my dad had an old garage there in Calistoga. I worked in there, and we worked on a lot of the farmers' cars and the vineyard trucks and all this kind of stuff. So, and I developed relationships with the kids in school, you know, that were involved in those businesses. So it was always on my mind. And my grandfather Vermeil made all the Vermeil wines at that time. And I grew up helping him, as did my brother. And so I always had that interest, you know, and wine was always such a big deal in my French-Italian family. You know, the new vintage it releases usually at Easter time, and you don't, you know, a couple years old, and the aging factor, the flavors, the nose, all this stuff is being discussed by my dad, my grandfather, and his friends. And it left a real serious interest or curiosity with me. And I asked a friend one time, you know, I said, my dad and his family was really involved in the wine world, and I'd like to make a few cases of Vermeil Cabernet. And the guy who had a little winery named Paul Smith on the Edge Winery.
Yep.
He said he'd do it. He'd do it. So he made about 150 to 200 cases. We picked the grapes from the Freddie Annie Vineyard, which we still pick today. My great-grandfather on the Italian side of my family owned a portion of it at one time. And so I said, let's do it. So our first release was 1999.
Mm.
Okay.
Perfect.
Well, we won the Super Bowl at the Rams.
Yep.
So the little winery sells all those cases quickly.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, let's keep doing it. I said, that's great. I had no money involved in it. So we kept doing it. Then some friends of mine, entrepreneurs, very successful business, came to me and said, why don't we turn your hobby into a business? I said, if you guys want to do it, you've got the money, we'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to On the Edge Winery. We ended up buying the little winery stock, what they had in barrels, bought them out, bottled it as Vermeil Wines, and officially went into full-fledged Vermeil wine business in 2008.
Yeah.
Producing around 2,000 cases a year. Mostly reds. We do make a Chardonnay. The grape comes from Dutton Ranch over in Sonoma County, and we make a Sauvignon Blanc, which is a Napa Valley grape as well. And it just became a business. And now, you know, it took 12 years. It's a business that's in the black.
Yeah.
So it's not a big deal. We have a tasting room in Napa.
Yep.
We always have people in the tasting room from Pennsylvania. I have 151 wine club members in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia area right now, because it is now legal to ship direct wines into Pennsylvania, which it never used to be.
Yep.
And overall, we have about 515 wine club members now, and it's going well. The tasting room does well, and you know it. And I mean, by meaning doing well, it means that it's paying for itself. The wines are high quality, high end, expensive, and we have fun with it. Our clientele now, for the most part, are charity events, wine events, country club events. where we go pour our wines and sell our wines there and actually sign up wine club members. Normally at an event like we have coming up on December 16th there, and yep. like you said in Belmont, we'll sign up 5 to 10 wine club members and sell some wine, and they also purchase wine to use as a tool to hold the dinner with and create money and raise money for what they call, you know, the lady basketball coach at Penn State, Carolyn Kiger.
Yeah, Carolyn Kiger, yep.
Kiger, is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, it is, yep.
Her project, and it's a fundraiser for what she calls the Pink Zone, whose mission is to help breast cancer patients and survivors. And hopefully we'll be successful. Hopefully we'll do some good wine business, and hopefully she'll make some money for her charity.
And that's what it's all about in the end. Because my broadcast partner for Penn State football, Jack Ham, has gone out to Sonoma, and he did go to On the Edge during the tour a couple of years ago. So, let's face it, you're turning out great product, I mean, which is really cool. I got to ask you, though, about the Garage Cabernet, because that's got to be personal to you.
Well, we never did. Somebody nicknamed it the Garage Cabernet, but we never had that on a label.
Yeah.
Because my dad was in the garage business, had an old garage behind our house, like I say, about three first downs before behind the kitchen. And people named our first Cabernet because they thought it was cute, the Garage Cabernet, you know.
Right.
But our real Vermeil label became, Vermeil Cabernet, Vermeil. We have two different Cabernets, the Rosedale Block Cabernet, Pickett Road Block Cabernet. Then we have the Jean-Louis Vermeil Cabernet, which was the hobby wine initially, and that has 20% of Cabernet Franc in it, but it's still a Cabernet. But somehow, someone nicknamed it the Garage Cabernet, and it stuck for a long time.
That's amazing. Yeah. This was a big year for you. What was it like when you received the phone call that said, you get a gold jacket in Canton?
Well, I was actually flying into the Napa Valley to spend a couple weeks working in the wine business. I was in the airport in San Francisco, walking off my Air American Airlines flight, and I get this phone call. It's David Butler. He says, Coach, this is David Butler from Pro Football Hall of Fame, and I'm not calling you to buy a case of wine. He says, I'm calling to let you know you are the coach finalist for the Hall of Fame this year. And what that means is if they do put a coach in, it's going to be you. And I was flabbergasted. I mean, I actually ended up leaning over and leaning against the wall. And I said to Carol, you know what happened? I was just told I'm the finalist for the Coaches Hall of Fame, the NFL Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame. And she blurts out, well, it's about time. But then anyway, it was very, it's hard to describe those kind of feelings. You know, they really are. It startled me. It's never been a deep expectation in my mind. You know, the Vermeil family never discussed Dick Vermeil going into the Hall of Fame at any time around a dinner table. And I just never put myself in that category. I knew 2 or 3 years ago I started becoming a candidate because it would come up in the voting process. But I always thought it would go to someone more deserving. And this time it didn't. It came to me. So all of a sudden in Canton, I find myself there August 6th thanking everybody that made it possible, you know. And it's still a little overwhelming. It really is.
You always had the reputation of somebody, obviously, you have to understand talent and so forth. But you always had the ability, it seemed, to understand not just talent, but character that went with talent. What qualities were you always looking for in players that could make a difference for you, but also had the character to play the game?
Well, you know, I love the hungry profile, the kid that has a great drive to excel and looking for an opportunity to be what he has the dream to be. And, you know, and sometimes it's glaring. You know, you can just tell. you're not motivating him. What you're doing is providing him an opportunity to do what he wants to do badly. And hopefully you provide him the time and the coaching to bring him along so he can be successful. You know, you cut a lot of kids over the years that don't make it.
Yeah.
You know, but you're always looking for that kid that has the talent that not a lot of people knew about or even thought about, and give him time to mature and take advantage of that ability. You know, Kurt Warner's a great example. You know, Herman Edwards was a free agent out of San Diego State. Yeah. You know, London Fletcher was up for the Hall of Fame now in the NFL, was a college free agent. It's when we signed him with the Rams. You know, there's a lot of those guys out there. So if you always have in the back of your mind, you're looking for character kids that really have a desire to excel and will do whatever it takes for them to be the best they can be. And I think it helped me to come up in coaching through high school, junior college, college, and then the NFL.
Right. Because
you got to evaluate a lot of personalities at a different age group and different levels of maturity. And I think it always helped me a little, gave me a little more ability to look into a kid and see where he's coming from and where he might go, you know.
Right. Oh, I remember your last UCLA team, I think it was John Shira, was a heart and soul kind of guy for you.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get Ron Jaworski in Philadelphia, but people don't realize that when you went to the Rams, your starting quarterback there was going to be Trent Green. So what did you see in Kurt Warner where you said, I still want him on the roster even though I'm starting camp with Trent Green as my quarterback?
Well, you know, really, as the story goes, Kurt Warner was there the year before Trent Green.
Okay.
As my third quarterback. And then the next year, we brought Trent Green there to be our quarterback, and he got hurt in the third preseason game, and we went with Kurt Warner, who had been our scout team quarterback the entire year, the year before. And, you know, we just had a hunch. And, you know, you got to be lucky, too. It's not all genius, believe me, Steve. You got to be a little lucky.
Yep.
And we were fortunate. I thought he could play, and I thought he could play well. I didn't have any idea he could play as well as he did, okay?
Yeah.
No one could touch, not anybody. I had great coaches and Mike Martz and Al Saunders and Jim Hennepin and those guys offensively. And by that time, the third year, we had developed, I knew we were a good football team. We had too many good players that had been through two tough years of training camp and losing and kept battling and just had, you know, a depth of character that you don't get to be around very often on any kind of team. And so I knew all we need was a catalyst on that field that could go ahead and allow everybody else to be as good as they could be. But I did not know that Kurt Warner could play at a Hall of Fame level right off the bat. Right off the bat. Yeah.
I think if anybody were to say that, oh, I knew he was right away. You're lying.
Yeah.
During the time when you were broadcasting, did you on CBS and ABC, and then, you know, and obviously along the way, paths would cross. Did you enjoy that part of it, at least at that time in your life?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. You know, it gave me an opportunity to watch other coaches coach.
Yeah.
Both on the college level and the NFL. The first 5 years, I was did about 90% of the games I broadcast were NFL games.
Yeah.
And 10% was college bowl games. And then sometimes I double up during the season and do both a pro game and a college game. But then I went to ABC and I was doing 90% college games and 10% pro games, NFL playoff games. So I got to watch coaches coach. I got to watch assistant coaches coach. I got to sit in the locker rooms and sit next to kids and listen to what they say and how they talk to each other and what they like, they don't like. I got to sit in the coaches meetings, because having had been a football coach in all levels, it opened a lot of doors for me when I went on to campuses. You know, I'd find myself putting on football clinics, you know, which was
right.
Fun.
Yeah.
Passed on some of the things I had learned as I grew as a coach, and then listening to other people, and it helped me a lot. It really did. Yeah.
Finally, you've given back a lot during the course of your career.
I mean,
you've donated a lot of time, a lot of energy to different causes along the way. Who instilled that in you along the way where it became a part of your fabric and your family's fabric?
Well, I think it goes all the way back to the small town I lived in.
Sure.
Where if anybody had a problem, everybody else rallied around and helped them with the problem. You know, whether it be health, emotional, social, accident, you know, that kind of 1,800 people. You know, in my graduating class from high school, we had 29 kids in it.
Okay. Wow.
And every kid in that class, their dad was like my second dad. You couldn't get away with anything.
Right.
You know, everyone had the right to discipline you at the time or reprimand you at the time without concern what your parents might say. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it creates an atmosphere where everybody is sort of helping the other guy. And my mom was really baking it, you know. I don't know how many times we'd sit down at a dinner table. We got somebody sitting at the dinner table. I didn't have a clue who it was, you know. But it was somebody who was experiencing hardship, and she'd bring them home and feed them, you know. And I can remember one time I got 2 footballs for Christmas. And she made me go give 1 football to a family in town that was depressed and working hard but underpaid, you know, so their Christmas wasn't nearly as warm and exciting as mine was. And, you know, I've never forgotten that gesture. Yeah. I've never forgotten. And so I think a lot of us who get involved in helping charities, and that it comes from the examples you were exposed to as a kid, you know.
Well, 5:30 on Friday, December 16th. At Sunman Hall at the Match Factory in Belfast. Start at 5:30. Dick, you'll be there. Vermeil Wines will be the centerpiece. There'll be some discussion, and it's going to be a great night. Have you thought yet what wines you want to feature?
You know, that's up to Bill Kurtzis, our chief operating officer. Bill handles that in the communication, and I'm sure we'll have at least 1 Cabernet. Maybe 2.
Yeah.
And we normally pour our blend, our 30 Roman numeral 34 for Super Bowl 34.
Yep.
We'll normally pour both whites, a Chardonnay and a Sauvignon Blanc. We only make 200 cases of Chardonnay, and about this year, probably just about 110 cases of Sauvignon Blanc. And but they all sell out. And every once in a while, we'll bring a Zinfandel, you know.
Yeah,
but,
nice.
You know what? Berries. I haven't actually seen the menu and how the chef has the wines match with the menu yet, but it'll be good. It'll be fun. Sometimes I have a hard time getting to talk wine and not football.
I understand that.
I went into New York now last month twice, on a Friday night and a Saturday night, and you talk about those Giant fans. My God, they don't forget anything. You know, Mirror Meadowlands and so-and-so players and all these kinds of things. And then they'll say, oh, yeah, we think the wine's good. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Once they're done telling you about Joe Pizarcik and Herman Edwards, yeah, then they'll
say. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, wine's really great, Dick.
The people will enjoy the wines. The people that really appreciate good wines are, you know, there are not a lot of people that have the palate or even the pocketbook to buy a lot of high-end quality wines.
Yeah.
And there are no average to poor at wines made in the Napa Valley.
Right.
You know, 4% of, 89% of the grapes picked in the United States come out of the Napa, come out of California.
Yep.
But only 4% of them come out of the Napa Valley.
Really?
9% of them come out of Sonoma County. Mm. So it's high-end quality grapes, you know, to make less expensive wines. You have to make large volumes. We don't have the capacity to do that. So we decided to go for the high end, and there's not a lot of people, but more and more every day that people that have the palate and the appreciation for higher end wines, you know.
Yeah.
And hopefully there in Belfont we'll have some. I hope so. Yeah, but I'll tell you this, they're going to enjoy it anyway. If they spend the money's going to help charity.
Yep.
And they'll enjoy the wines. They don't have to buy any. They'll still have a good time.
They absolutely will. And listening to you, they absolutely will. It's at Sunman Hall, Match Factory, Belfont, Friday the 16th starts at 5:30. It's going to be spectacular, benefiting the Pink Zone and all the great work they do with breast cancer research and treatment, and that is what it's going to be on the 16th. Coach, what an absolute pleasure. Always great to talk with you. Thank you so much for your time today, whether we were talking football or we were talking wine.
Steve, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to market the project. Take care.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.